Hello.
Hi, how are you?
Oh, pretty good.
Yeah?
The gloomy morning so far.
Holy smokes, I don't know if you had the unbelievable downpours early, but oh, wow, we didn't know if it was hailing or just raining. It was just raining.
I definitely had plenty of rain so far this morning. I heard it. I got up early to let the dog out and feed her. And then sometimes I'll or usually I'll stay up at that point, but today I just, the fact that the sun wasn't out, I was just still feeling kind of groggy. I went back to
Yeah,
bed.
so gloomy.
Yeah. So I definitely heard some rain while I was laying there a few times. I don't know how hard it was coming down, but looks like it's gonna kind of continue throughout the day.
Yeah, it's well, August is starting kind of like July has been. We've had more than our share of rain in July, that's for sure.
Yeah, it does look good the rest of the week, though. Looks like it's
That's
going to be a
good.
pretty nice week, and next week going to be nicer than this one was. But
Yeah, I'm ready for some drier weather for sure.
yeah.
I'm glad I managed to get the lawn mowed yesterday. That won't be happening today.
No, not a good day for that, that's for sure.
No. Oh, so how you doing?
Pretty good.
Good. Sorry, I'm a bit late.
Yeah, no problem. Kids shut the computer down, huh?
They never do that. Usually, because they'll play a couple of games on online, and usually I'm logging. I turn the thing on, and the internet, like the actual web page, is still up and stuff. This time,
Yeah,
the
they just
computer
walked
was
away.
off. I'm like, "What is going on?" So my computer's getting pretty old too, so it takes a while for it to turn on and for me to actually access anything.
Yeah, I've had computers like that. It gets to a point you, if you know you want to use it, you turn it on and then walk away and come back.
Exactly what I do now. But at the same time, it's like I use it so infrequently. It's not worth like running out and buying a new computer. You know what I mean? It's
Yeah.
like I use it for, placing my DCBS order, might, surf the web on and off. But I mean, honestly, since I've been working from home, I actually share, there's only one spot really for a computer to go in the house. So, I use my existing keyboard, mouse, and monitor, which means that during the week, I basically disconnect everything from my house computer and connect it to my work one, and vice versa on the weekends. So it's not like I really am using my home computer all that often, And the program that me and Mike use for comic books,
Yeah.
that's like the major thing that I pretty much use my computer for. But it's not so bad that I'd want to pay money for a new computer at this point. I just do like you said. I basically log in and I know I'll, step away and wait for it to be ready, and then I come back.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I know if it was something where you used your personal computer a lot more, and you had that set up, I know that they make switches where you could plug all your peripherals into the switch and both PCs, and then you could just like flip a switch to switch over
Oh,
the monitor
really?
and all that stuff. Yeah.
I might actually look at that anyhow, because like I said, the kids a couple times this past week, I don't know if you're familiar with this. I didn't know much about it until recently. Roblox, Roblox. It's a internet game.
Yeah, I've seen the name in passing, like just in, 'cause I look at like video game news and stuff, but it seemed like kind of more of a kid's thing, so
Oh,
I
it
haven't
is.
looked into it too much.
Yeah, so they like to play that. So it's set up on their iPad, but if they want to play together, then somebody's got to be on the PC. So I found myself, even during the week, as soon as I was done for the day at work, I had to switch everything over to the home PC so they could play together. And then the next morning when I'm getting ready for work, I have to switch it all back. It's not that big of a deal, but it's kind of a pain because I have to move the whole desk that everything's sitting on, kind of away from the wall to get at the back of the computer and stuff.
Yeah.
And it's just a pain to do that. If it's once a week, that's fine, but do it three or four times a week, it just becomes annoying. So yeah. I had no idea they offered something like that. So I think I'll actually look to see if it's something reasonably priced that I could take a look at.
Yeah, I can't remember exactly what they're called or what how much they cost, but if you have trouble finding, I can try to look as well, because I know something like that exists.
I'm gonna do some searching later today. I'll see if I can find something.
Yeah, I know I had I have one that switches over the any USB stuff, so you could use it to if you're keyboard and mouse or USB, you can switch those over, but I'm pretty sure they have them where you can switch the monitor over to. Or, I mean, their monitor itself might have more than one input on it.
It does. It does. It's just that if I have, because I've got the HDMI goes from my home PC to the monitor, and then the older fashioned PC thing. But what I've noticed in the past is that if I have both computers on, then the HDMI just overrides it, so I can't see what I still would have to unplug it from the home computer in order to be able to see what I'm doing.
I see.
But I'll do some investigation, see if it's worth it financially or not.
Yeah, for the convenience.
Yeah, exactly.
That's cool.
No, that's good to know. Thank you for telling me that.
I had
no idea.
Something like that exists anyway. Or there's probably, I think there's a variety of different configurations and options. And,
yeah.
Yeah, we had my niece's birthday party. She's turning 7 yesterday. And I was thinking of you because I was remembering how we were talking about, the summertime and going to social gatherings after not doing it last year. And it wasn't a big party, but there's only been one other occasion so far, really, where I've gotten together with more than, say 4 other people, and it's always been, my parents or my in-laws or, my sister or some of that, people that are real immediate,
Yeah.
So I think this is only the second time where it's been a little bit more extended than that. And man, I mean, it was after just a couple hours, we got home and I was just in a daze. I just wanted to crawl into a corner somewhere and shut the lights off or something. I just was zoning out and just staring off into space. Like, what just happened?
Isn't that funny?
And it wasn't even, that, like I said, it wasn't that big of a party. It was, but I just, it knocked me out.
Yeah. I totally get it. It takes some getting used to for sure. And here we are, the thing's kind of getting a little bit rougher again, at least if you've got people, that for whatever reason can't be vaccinated, I do, or, the 7-year-old's birthday, I'm hesitant to do a lot of things with the kids.
Right.
I don't know, but it's, moving in the wrong direction a little bit right now.
Yeah, it helps. Yeah, it's it works out well for her because her birthday's in the summer. Though we didn't do anything last year.
Yeah, no, I mean, we did, we literally didn't see anyone last, like, the summertime. But no, we, I mean, we visited my parents sometimes through, like, their screen door, or eventually they would, we would go over their house or they would come over to ours, but we would be a good 10 feet away from each other outdoors in the backyard,
Yeah, we did that a few times just with my parents or whatever, just set up chairs in the backyard at one other or other place until the weather got cold again.
Exactly. Oh,
But
man.
so yeah, Mike is a parent. Not sure what he has going on. But
Yeah, no, Michael. What
Rob's
the
the through The through line in these
heck?
last few episodes.
Yeah, for at least the past couple, that's true.
Yeah. Haven't gotten a just chance to listen to your guys' episode yet, but I plan on it.
Yeah, it was a good one. We had a good time. I think he was gonna backload a lot of our chit chat that we started the podcast with, because I mean, I don't think anyone is more aware than you how we'll just start chatting about a million things that are not about retro. So he's like, at the end, he's like, yeah, he's like, I think all that stuff we were talking about, he's like, I'll throw on the end. And then if people, want to listen to it, they can listen to it, but they don't have to sit there and wait for, 40 minutes before we start covering a retro comic or whatever.
A rare edit
Yes, a
to
very
Mike
rare edit.
Myers
That's right.
podcast.
Oh, that's
Yeah,
funny.
I saw that in the description. I think he said something like that. He said something about it in the episode description. So I don't know why I ended up sending it, but I almost tweeted you guys on to something to the fact like, see what happens when I'm not there. All
That's
this
exactly what
chitter
we said. We're like,
chatter.
we're out of control. We got nobody to keep us in line.
I'm not there just sitting silent in the background to make you guys self-conscious about the fact that I don't know what you're talking about.
Or even to, sometimes, I mean, you come right out and you're, okay, we got to get back on track and start talking about something retro. Like, oh, yeah, that's right, we do.
That's why
Yeah,
we're here.
that's why we're here.
That's
But
funny.
I only have a couple things covered because I actually overslept this morning. Again, I think it was the weather, but
Yeah.
I was up a bit later last night, and that certainly contributed to it. But the fact that it wasn't sunny outside, I had no idea what time it was. When I checked my phone, I'm like, oh my God, it's like after 9:30. So,
Oh, wow.
yeah.
Speaking in generally speaking, yeah, I've been in a kind of a comic book mood these past few months. I kind of go like I don't necessarily read as consistently throughout the year as you guys do, but one of the things that got me or kind of kept me has been getting me going lately was I think I mentioned in passing a couple episodes ago, but that Joe had mentioned on an old episode of Everything Else, which I've been catching up with also, and I think I'm all caught up on that
Oh, nice.
now. He had mentioned Cartoonist Kayfabe, they release it as a podcast also, but like Mike said, it's first and foremost a YouTube channel, and so they're constantly making reference to like a visual, because it started out as looking at issues of Wizard magazine from the beginning and going through it page by page and commenting on the stuff in there. So it's kind of 90s focused because it's the cartoonist Jim Rugg and Ed Piskor. And they're like, I think I'm right between the two of them in age. One's a couple years older, one's a couple years younger, so kind of similar age. They stayed in comics, both making their own and reading them. Whereas, like, after the first couple years of the 90s, is when I jumped out. So, but those first few issues of Wizard that they did, I remember very well. And just in the 90s itself, it's very interesting and fascinating. But, you know, they both kind of started there with their fandom and like superhero comics, and then got really turned on to like underground comics, and were really inspired by that. And that's sort of the direction that their careers took, as being cartoonists that do, you know, do the writing and the drawing. And so it's been interesting because there was a feature in Wizard called Palmer's Picks, and especially that they use as a jump off to talk about a lot of, 'cause Palmer's Picks was a column that focused on underground stuff,
Oh, okay.
mostly, indie stuff. And they use that as a jumping off point to talk about a lot of that stuff. So that's been interesting, and kind of made me excited about comics. And I've checked out, I'm not actually going to talk about them today, but just in general, just been checking out some stuff like Love and Rockets and, you know, that like era of black and white and indies and that kind of stuff. And you know, it's a really interesting, really good show. They have a lot of good commentary, and they talk about the whole spectrum, you know, and they have appreciation for 90s comics, and you know, for the visuals in particular. They definitely have a you know, the types of stuff that inspired them were the cartoonists that had their own particular vision, you know, and did their own stuff, wrote it and drew it, and possibly more. And so they definitely really have a strong emphasis on even just folks that are only writers or only artists, but have a real particular vision. Someone like Alan Moore, you know, that have a real strong artistic vision, as opposed to somebody who, you know, might just, I'm not going to name any names. They do name some names at times, but just, you know, turn in the work, you know, do the job, you know. But yeah, it's really good. I am
It's
glad.
interesting.
Yeah, I mean, they've been doing it for a couple of years, but it's been interesting. You know, it's very interesting commentary, because they know comic books inside and out, you know, in terms of how things are made, and talking about line weights and different inking techniques. And you know, they can look at a piece of art and you know, notice stuff that I would never, you know. You know, it's not your, it's definitely coming from a knowledgeable perspective. So
That's cool.
yeah, it's been interesting. So anyway, yeah, so I've been reading some of that kind of stuff. And also, you know, Mike's been on the G.I. Joe kick, and we were recording that episode, and I had looked up for him the fact that the trades of all the what was originally in Marvel G.I. Joes were in Comixology Unlimited. And so I was digging into that more, and it seems like, as I've said in the past, like Comixology Unlimited is pretty much just like a chance to sample some stuff and then buy the rest if you like it. But it seems to have improved so much, somewhat, because there does seem to be publishers like IDW that have put more than that on there. Like, you know, I had noticed on that episode that the G.I. Joe, older G.I. Joe stuff was all on there. And it
That's a pretty
seems,
good deal then.
yeah, and so IDW seems like a publisher that does have a lot of their back catalog on there. Mm-hmm. You know, the newer stuff's not, but almost as if they're you know, obviously Marvel and DC, they have the resources and the catalog to have their own services. But, you know, some of these publishers maybe are, you know, just use that's Comixology Unlimited as their opportunity to sort of do something similar.
Yeah, for sure. It's funny because Stacy's cousin, we were just over there last night. They had kind of had a family night, and he was saying that he asked me about Comixology. I said, well, if you're talking about the unlimited service, I said, I haven't tried that myself. I said, but you know, it's very inexpensive. He's like, oh, I was thinking maybe trying it out, but it sounded like a lot that he wanted to sample were a lot of the, DC stuff over the past probably couple of years.
Mm.
And, I'm like, I'll be honest with you. I'm like, I don't really go on Comixology, but, I kind of be surprised if DC had, you know, a lot of that type of stuff on there because they have their own service. I don't know if that's true or not, that, you know, if they offer anything on there at all now, but, you know, I told him definitely, you know, check it out for the money that it is a month. If he finds even one trade that he wants to read, it's kind of, you know, he's kind of got his money's worth. So.
Yeah, I know Marvel has trades on there. I'm not sure if, I'm not sure. I can't remember if DC does, but yeah, I mean, yeah, I would definitely say if like someone was mostly interested, you know, close to exclusively interested in DC or Marvel, then it would make more sense to go with their service. But
exactly.
I was reading a lot of Marvel 60s stuff, but then I, partially from watching cartoons kayfabe, I got interested in branching out and stuff somewhat. So I, Comixology Unlimited is nice for that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure.
For checking out some stuff. And a lot of publishers do still just have, you know, a sampling of stuff. Image, I think it seems to be probably something that's not surprisingly up to the creator, you know,
mm-hmm.
how much of their stuff is on there.
Yeah.
Cause I did read some early Spawn, and they have, he has like the first few trades where he collected the early stuff available. Mm-hmm. And then after that, you know, you have to buy everything. Same with Savage Dragon. But yeah, you can read a lot of comics for not a lot of money these days.
Yeah, for sure.
Legally.
Yes, exactly.
and still be legal about it.
Yeah, pretty cool.
Yeah. Well, why don't you, if you want to go ahead,
sure.
Start us off since I was talking a bit there.
All right. So, I've got today, I have a comic and a movie. I'll cover, the movie first. I don't know if you've seen this before, and I hope that we haven't covered it. I did search for it, but it's incredibly hard to look up this title on the Geek Brunch website because it's called REC, R-E-C, like record.
Hmm.
So it's literally coming up like over and over again on if you try to search REC.
Yeah.
I don't know. Have you ever seen this movie?
I haven't seen it, but yeah, I remember, it's kind of like, it's like one of those horror films that, uses like supposed, found footage kind of.
Yes. Uh-huh. Yeah. Yeah. So.
It has some sequels too, right?
They have, three.
Well, it's a horror movie. So.
Yep. Yep. 2, 3, and 4. The one main character doesn't appear at all in 3, came back for 4. They get, as most horror movies do, get worse as the sequels come out.
Mm-hmm.
The first one I think is phenomenal. It's from Spain in 2007. it was remade in the United States within the past 10 years, I'd say. It was called Quarantine in
the
States. Yeah, just totally remade. Also decent. It was a good movie. I believe, if I'm remembering correctly, I saw Quarantine first. But Wreck is just what it's much it's just better. So yeah, 2007 from Spain. It's all in Spanish. So unless you're very fluent in very quick speaking Spanish, you want the English subtitles like I did. But the premise is this woman. She's a reporter. She does a show, like an overnight type show called While You Were Sleeping, where her and her cameraman go to different places throughout the city and try and just highlight like different things that go on, you know, at night while most people are asleep. So in this particular episode, she's visiting a fire station and just talking to all the firefighters there and stuff, and you know what they face throughout the, you know, what they do throughout the night. And you know, I mean, anything from, you know, they sit back to watch movies, they're playing basketball, they're actually sleeping, you know, during the evening and stuff like that. She's getting to know them, walking around doing all these interviews, and of course finally the alarm goes off, and it's an elderly woman apparently is trapped in her apartment. So they go rushing off, and they get to the apartment, and there's an apartment building rather, and most of the tenants are like downstairs on the first floor hallway, and you know, everyone's kind of screaming and stuff like that. They're just saying that there was like something wrong with her, or she attacked somebody or whatever. And the police two policemen were already there. And so the two policemen, the two firefighters, and the reporter's name is Angela. Her cameraman is Pablo, and they go up to accompany them. The police are pretty annoyed that there's a news station there, but you know, they're with the firefighters. So they go into the apartment's lock, they break into the apartment, and you know, sure enough, there's this, you know, there's this old woman at the back, just totally like acting like she's just doesn't know where she is. She's very confused. She's walking around. She's not paying attention to what anyone's saying. They said, okay, we're going to get you to the hospital and stuff like that. And then out of nowhere, she like lunges at the older policeman and starts, you know, biting the crap out of his neck. They pull her off. They grab him, pull him back downstairs, you know, all that stuff. So, you know, obviously you get the feeling, you know, what kind of movie this is going to be at this point. And so the whole premise of this is that, okay, they're in this apartment building, but you know, as soon as they drag the police chief down, back down to the main hallway, you know, to get him out and call for an ambulance, they see that like things are actually like the building itself is being like sealed with like plastic and stuff like that, and you see people kind of with lights, you know, beyond outside and stuff, and there's people on the loudspeaker saying that the building's been sealed for, you know, a possible you know, medical situation or something like that, and they won't let anyone in or out. So then at this point they still don't quite know what's going on, but they're they start looking for, they're like, we got to get out of here because this guy's going to, he's going to bleed to death and he's going to die. So they're looking for other ways to get out, but it seems like everywhere they go, it's just, things are just sealed off. It turns out one of the residents at the apartment building is a medical intern, so he starts trying to care for the policeman. The younger policeman is now the only one that has any type of access to the outside through his walkie-talkie. Their cells are not working. The TV actually is not working. The radio is not working. And so they're just the outside. They're telling this police man that everyone's got to stay, you know, indoors in there, that they're bringing in a medical inspector to check out the situation. And, you know, once they clear the people, then they'll be allowed to leave. But right now there's a thinking that there might be some sort of a, you know, situation there that could be contagious. So there's a mother there with her young daughter that's running a very high fever. The father had gone out for medication. The little girl apparently has tonsillitis. You come to learn that they also have a pet dog that had to go to the vet because it had been bitten or something like that and was sick. So that's how, what you end up learning is that the dog somehow was infected. And that's how the outside authorities became aware and narrowed it down to this apartment building, which is why they were able to seal it off so quickly. So, you know, and it, like any type of typical movie like this that's kind of set in one set location, you know, people start dying, you know. The old woman is still there. She ends up there's the one part. So the one of the firefighters rather stayed up there in the upstairs hallway where the old woman had been, just to keep, you know, their eye out on her. They, you know, they weren't standing right next to her or anything by any means, but they weren't going to leave her alone. And, you know, as they're trying to figure out why they're being trapped in the apartment building and so on, all of a sudden the firefighter comes like just crashing down from the middle stairwell, lands like with a thump just in the middle of the floor. And, you know, the implication is that somehow the old woman either pushed him or actually threw him like down the open stairwell. And he's actually still alive, but he's in obviously incredibly bad shape. He's not talking or anything. He's unconscious, but he still has a pulse. So now they have two people that desperately have to get to a hospital in time. But, you know, eventually they go back upstairs and stuff, and, you know, they end up having to shoot the old woman. If somebody else ends up getting bit, it turns out the young girl, of course, doesn't have tonsillitis. She had interacted with the dog, and you know, she lunges and starts biting her mom. And, you know, I mean, it goes from there where, you know, one by one, you're down to just a few people. And the health inspector did come in, and, you know, while they were checking out the two that were in critical condition, they kind of passed and then became zombies as well and bit the medical inspector and so on and so forth, until really there's one firefighter and the reporter and cameraman left. And shortly after they, you know, the firefighter tells them to, you know, go upstairs, get the key to the upstairs penthouse because that guy hadn't been there. He goes from wherever they're, I think they're in Barcelona, and he only spends very limited amount of time in Barcelona. He lives in Madrid, but he's got the whole penthouse. Well, the intern was also in charge of the building, and he had keys for everywhere. So the firefighter that's still alive tells the reporter to go upstairs and find, you know, the set of keys that he must have so they can get in the penthouse, and maybe there's a way out from the roof. So she goes up there, finally finds the keys, comes back downstairs. The firefighter is just gone. And they start hearing all sorts of growling from down below, and they look down the stairwell, and there's like all these former residents all turned into zombies, including that firefighter. So, you know, they go running upstairs. They manage to get into the penthouse and close the door just before the zombies try to crash through. And At this point, now the power's out. At first, they're using the light on the camera, but then that ends up breaking, and so now they're using night vision on the camera, so only who's looking through the camera can see what's going on. And there's all these newspaper articles all over the inside of the apartment. Looks like a kitchen, but it looks like it's almost been converted to a lab. Beakers and whatnot all over the place. And on all those articles, it's talking about this girl that they say was possessed. They find an old, like a reel-to-reel tape recorder. And apparently whoever lives in this penthouse had been taking notes and researching this. And he is talking about this girl and how it seems to be some sort of a virus that she has not a possession, and that he needs to bring her, you know, back with him and, you know, do some research on it and so on and so forth. And as they're looking around, they see like this totally like weird looking deformed female that's off in the other room. And again, it's pitch black. So it's just a very creepy looking, very skinny zombie, like just very elongated, very looks tall, looks extremely thin, long legs, long arms, just looks really bizarre, but you know, super creepy. And you know, they're making too much noise, so this creature comes towards them and stuff, and eventually gets a hold of Pablo. And so Angela's the only one left, and she's free, you know, totally freaked out. And she at one point she falls down, drops the camera. So the camera's like facing her. And so you're seeing it through the night vision, and she's like crawling on the ground closer and closer to the camera, reaching out for it. And then like the last shot is just, you don't see anything behind her, but you see her suddenly being like pulled really fast, like away from the camera. And then that's the end of the movie. So it was very entertaining, very cool. You know, found footage, zombie, film from Spain. I definitely recommend it. Pretty much the American version is beat by beat. It's just not done as well.
Uh-huh.
But, yeah, I really like this one. I actually bought, a while back, Amazon had one and two is kind of like a little bundle, on Blu-ray for a pretty cheap price, so I ended up picking those up, which is good. I wanted to watch it last night, and it's the only way you could have watched it is to pay a few dollars on Amazon Prime, but I had the Blu-ray, so I was able to watch it for free.
That's cool. Yeah, was that on your is that in your book or your list?
It is not. I don't remember how I – like I said, we saw Quarantine. I think we went in the theater to see it or something. I was just in the mood for a horror movie. And I think through reading about that, I learned that there was, you know, an original Spanish version. And at one point it was free on Amazon Prime. I think all of the Rec movies were, at least all of them they had up to that point. And so I watched it, you know, at that point years ago, and I'm like, wow, this is really cool. So then I watched all the rest of them, and like I said, they get progressively worse. Two is still pretty decent. But after that, aren't that great. Really well done, found footage movie for sure.
Nice.
Yeah.
Wondered if it was on your list. Cause I think it's the first original Spanish one is generally pretty well regarded.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah, no, it didn't make it to the list, but I was happy that I had discovered it. It definitely, as far as I'm concerned, it belongs on there for sure.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And I assume that since you liked it, that the found footage aspect of it wasn't, that's can be tricky to do well where it doesn't mm-hmm. end up being irritating, I find.
I was okay with it. I actually, I don't know why I forgot, because that's kind of like the whole premise of the thing is that like she's filming a TV show, you know. Mm-hmm. And of course, you know, as it goes, it kind of gets to be it becomes less believable that somebody's really walking around with a camera doing all this stuff.
Yeah.
At first, you're like, okay, first, obviously at first, they're actually filming the episode. Then it's like, we have to document what's going on here because we're trapped inside this apartment. And we want somebody to actually know what's going on. But then as things escalate, you know, I mean, in real life, the priority of making sure you're filming all of this stuff would drop very, very quickly in terms, mm-hmm. you know, in survival. But you know, all in all, I feel like they did a good, it wasn't distracting. I mean, some people just don't do well with found footage for the shakiness.
Yeah.
That doesn't bother me in general, but I feel they incorporated it for the most part into the movie fairly well, where it's not like, okay, why do they still have this camera? You know, they made some decisions, whether it was, you know, the power going out and the only light they can have is from the actual camera, you know, so on and so forth. That kind of made it more sensical that, you know, you'd be actually needing to be looking through the camera, or at least utilizing the camera for light purposes, you know?
Yeah. That's cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, I remember I saw Blair Witch Project in the theater, and mm-hmm. then there was definitely a slew of that type of movie. Most yes, pretty bad after that.
Yeah. Yeah, every movie after that was a found footage horror movie. Yeah. No matter how little sense it made that anyone had a camera with them.
Yeah. That's funny.
Yep. So what do you have?
Well, so I mentioned reading stuff on Comixology Unlimited and IDW. And I was poking through what they had on there, and I saw that, you know, there's just tons and tons. Like, if you wanted to read Ninja Turtle comics, Comixology Unlimited is where it's at. Because IDW has the license and they've republished most of the old stuff and all that's on there, and like all the new IDW stuff except for the more recent stuff's on there. So there's tons of Ninja Turtle comics on there. And IDW had done these nice big hardcover collections of all the Eastman and Laird work on the original Turtles, in black and white. Have you seen those, or do you have any of those?
I don't have any, but I'm aware of them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They're oversized volumes, but so I used to have a smaller 8-inch tablet, and earlier this year I got a newer Samsung 10-inch tablet, and I used to kind of feel like, oh, 8-inch, you know, it's a nice kind of convenient size for reading comics, but ever since I got this bigger one, I've actually been liking it on the bigger tablet.
Mm-hmm.
It's still smaller than the, so it's a really similar size to a normal comic. It's still smaller than the oversized hardcovers that they did. And, I guess just the way that the pages are and the size of the lettering, it actually looks pretty good on the, tablet. As opposed to, I mentioned I was reading Lone Rockets, and, those are like mostly magazine size, I think.
Oh, uh-huh.
And, the aspect ratio kind of between, obviously you could do panel by panel, which I generally don't like to do because page design is, to me, is a part of comics, you know?
Yeah, it's part of the experience.
Yeah, and you lose that entirely. Sometimes I compromise by getting a view of the entire page so I know where it starts and ends and how it all looks together as a layout. And then go into the panel to read if it's like a double page spread or something like that. And I can't, the text is too small. The Love and Rockets, like, I still read in full page, but, the way that the magazine size shrunk to the tablet size, that the lettering was kind of was a little small for me. But but this list works out pretty well because the aspect ratio is still the same and stuff. So I was going to talk about so they started doing one shots for each of the four turtles. The first one they did was Michelangelo, and then the second one, which I'm going to talk about, is Donatello. This is in the second volume of the collections.
So these are like the original, those original one shots.
Yeah.
It was a black and white, right?
Yeah, this in the collection, it's in between, I think, issue, let me just look here. But yeah, this is still the early days. And the black and white hardcover collections they did, it's all the Eastman and Laird stuff, which Eastman and Laird started off doing the series, obviously, and then at a certain point, they started bringing in a lot of guest creators, and IDW published those separately, separated them out. So if you wanted to read like sequentially one through whatever, everything, you kind of have to, after like volume three of the black and whites, I think you have to like bounce back and forth, between the the Eastman and Laird and the non-Eastman and Laird stuff. And then they came back and did the famous, like, City at War, I think it's called. I get it mixed up because IDW, the new IDW series, did a City something
story they just did too. That not long ago, yeah.
Yeah, like, kind of inspired by the, so the names there of the two are really similar.
Yeah.
But
yeah, I didn't even know that they did an original one. I didn't know that this was a kind of like inspired by.
At least the name's similar. I don't know how, you know, close it, you know, how much it's inspired, but the name's similar enough to mix me up.
Yeah, for sure.
But yeah, this in the collection, and it's close, but maybe not exactly to when it came out in the collection in volume two, it's in between issues 8 and 9 of the original series.
Oh, so very early on.
Yeah. And I think that they were the four solo issues were all done fairly early on. Mm-hmm. Kind of to give you a sense of the different, just to like, actually they are pretty good even in the regular issues of giving you, you start to see the different personalities, of the turtles come out, and you know, the cartoon later on, sort of exaggerated and emphasized those personalities, but they didn't change them. You know, Michelangelo is the like kind of happy, carefree, go lucky guy. Donatello is the scientist guy. Leonardo's the leader. And Raphael's the kind of serious, one that kind of struggles with his aggression. Mm-hmm. Actually, no, now that I say Raphael was actually the first one that they
Raphael
did, I believe, because that's also where Casey Jones was introduced, he came around really early too.
Okay.
The guy with the hockey mask.
Oh, yeah.
Because they sort of, the Raphael story kind of encounters Casey, and Casey's like kind of like a mirror for him to make him think about like his own aggressiveness, because Casey kind of takes it farther than he would and makes him think about how far he would take things. Mm-hmm. So anyway, Donatello, this issue is actually kind of a tribute to Jack Kirby. Eastman and Laird, very big Kirby fans, like a lot of cartoonists, a lot of comic book creators. Actually, one of the things they pointed out on a cartoonist kayfabe was how like it seemed like all the image founders who were all big Kirby fans all seem like wanted to have some sort of character named Kirby when they were creating their new creations at Image. Like, want to have a character named Kirby or inspired by Kirby. This is not just a character named Kirby that just happens to have the name Kirby and is otherwise kind of different. They go a step further with it, and it starts out with a splash page in more ways than one, where Raphael is all coming out of the shower. He's all wet and he's complaining, I guess maybe because the water is all cold or something. At this point, the turtles are living in the same building as April, who they met in an early storyline, and they had to leave the sewers because their sewer home got invaded. It wasn't safe anymore. You see that Donatello, they're used to expecting Donatello to fix everything. Donatello ends up finally agreeing, and he goes down to, he's gonna go take a look because this way they won't have to call a repairman, and the less people around the building, the better. She has, I guess, leased little off. She's leased. There's some little office space in front of the cellar area that she's leased out to this guy named Kirby. She reminds him to keep an eye out for him. He's coming and going all the time. They don't. She doesn't want him to get spotted. Donatello's not too worried about it. They're like 16 years old, I guess, at this point, and they've had a lot of time practicing keeping out of sight. He heads on down in the basement, and he's like, and then he's like, "What the heck is that noise?" And there's a cool double page splash where Donatello is, he's kind of like falling backwards in surprise. And there's this crazy looking, it's like a humanoid body, but it's got wings and claws. And then it's got this big, almost like box-like face with these horn-like appendages coming off of it. And its face is almost all mouth and sharp teeth. This is your title page also, and title and credits page. The story is called Kirby and the Warp Crystal. It ends up going flying past. But it basically flies into a dead end, and when Donatello goes to look, it's gone, but there's nowhere for it to have gone. There's no doors, no windows, and the wall is solid. So he's like, "Well, maybe if I retrace the path that it came from, I can figure out what's going on." And he notices that this front office area, there's some light coming from it, and he peeks in, and there's Kirby sitting at a desk drawing. We get a panel that's a close-up of what he's drawing, and it's this like spherical creature with appendages hanging off of it, and it's got wings like a fly. And as Donatello watches it, It just appears off of the page and in real life flies up off of the page. And noticeably, I think they purposely do. Well, the close-up accomplishes two things in that we also see that the pencil that he's holding has this like crystal tied to it, like up and near the top near the eraser. It's got this crystal just like a bunch of rubber bands almost like holding it onto the pencil.
Wow.
And it's funny, they the one of the neat things about these collections is every single issue afterwards, Eastman and Laird have their commentary. It's mostly Eastman. Like, Laird will chime in and tends to not have as much to say. He does for this issue because apparently he was the primary creative force on this issue. They kind of got Kirby's permission to use Kirby's likeness, so they definitely give him hairy forearms. So I guess he was a hairy dude because he's got his sleeves rolled up, and they definitely make a point to emphasize his hairy forearms. So Donatello is so surprised by what happens that he gives an outburst, and Kirby's like, "Holy cow, a green alien!" He's like, "You must be real because I didn't draw you." And he assumes he's ass assumes that he's there for the crystal on his pencil. He's like, "No need for any rough stuff. I was just borrowing it." So Donatello's like, no, I'm not, that's not the case. And he's like, I'm just, how did you do that? And it's like Kirby says, it's not me. I mean, I can draw, but I'm it's the crystal that's making it come to life. He's like, here, give it a try. And Donatello draws, basically like a stick figure kind of thing. And do you hear that car in the background?
Yeah, whose car is that?
I don't know, the neighbor.
Mm-hmm.
I'm surprised. Was funny, the other day it was going off, the car alarm was going off, and she's next to me, but she's not doing it right now. But Mabel, like, I don't know, she thinks it's like a dog or something, or just, I mean, I don't know what she thinks, but whatever the case may be, sometimes when the car alarm goes off, she'll end up howling.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
How funny.
She'll howl along with it. Not feeling it this morning, though, huh?
Too tired.
Yeah. It's like, wake up and it's nighttime already. So this silly like stick figure thing he draws pops up and does like this little dance and then disappears. And he says, Kirby's like, yeah, it's pretty crazy. I don't know how it works, but I started this new sketchbook and everything I draw jumps off the page, but they don't last more than a minute. And before they vanish, and he says, except for there's one exception. And he's a thing I drew a couple weeks ago. And so he moves some boards out of the way, and it's this portal basically. And the border, like the frame, is all like Kirby tech looking stuff. And Donatello's so fascinated that he just goes ahead and tries like walking through it. And Kirby's like, "Wow, be careful." But Donatello's head reappears back through the portal and says, "You gotta check this out. You gotta see what's on the other side of this." So Kirby's like, yeah, you know what the heck? Let me grab my sketchbook, and he jumps through. So it's like this whole, it's like a world where stuff that Kirby drew is running around. Like they see this creature run past. He's like, well, I remember drawing that. Is this where everything disappeared to? And Eastman and Laird, they definitely do a good job with like leading you into your double page splash. It's a simple effect, but the previous one that I mentioned was kind of the same thing as this one, where like you have a panel where the two, Donatello and Kirby, are have both this shocked look on their face, and it says they're saying "Good Lord" together, and so it makes you want to turn the page, and see what they're looking at. And it's this double page spread where they kind of crest this hill, and there's just this huge battle going on between men in like boxer helmet style helmets and armor, fighting these like Kirby aliens. So it's pretty cool. So they get spotted by these aliens, and we get some action for the issue, where Donatello starts fighting off some of them with his martial arts skills. And but he says, we're gonna need some help, Kirby. There's too many of these things. And he's like, I got an idea. And he starts drawing Donatello on his sketchbook. And but he draws this like this fist, kind of this weapon that covers his whole forearm, that he grips the end of with his fist, and it just appears on Donatello's arm after Kirby gets done drawing. He says, I call it a gravitic equalizer. It cancels the gravity equation. Definitely looks and sounds like something Kirby would invent. And he says, just point it and press the thumb button. So Donatello says, okay, and here goes nothing, and it lets off like a bunch of blasts and sends the aliens flying into the sky. So Kirby starts calling out, being Donatello's eyes, telling him bogeys at 9 o'clock, and Donatello's, eat negative gravity, you hosers, yahoo. But then so he fires off a bunch of shots, and then it starts to fizzle, and it's like, well, I'll use it as a club anyway. But then he shouts, we need some more high-tech backup, man. So Kirby starts furiously drawing, and it's like, add a size reference for scale, finish it up with a few details, and voila. And all of a sudden, they're on top of this giant machine that Kirby calls a mobile creep trapper. And it starts, like, it has these metal arms that start scooping up the creatures and throwing it into this large mouth beneath them. But it ends up getting filled up. With the mouth gets entirely filled with these creatures, and they keep coming, and Kirby's like, all right, I gotta think of something else. And so he's safe up on top of this machine. So Donatello's like, well, you're doing that, I'll do my th you do your thing, I'll do mine. And he jumps down and starts fighting. They got a splash page of him standing there with his bow, and he's got and one of the aliens up on top of lifted up with his bow, and others coming on. He's fighting, and Kirby's struggling to think of what he should do. And he's like, wait a minute, if all the things that he's fighting are in the sketchbook, he's like, I just gotta be, and he gets an idea, and he's like, I just gotta be fast enough. So he just says, for the next several minutes, Kirby's hand is a blur, and he just starts rifling through his sketchbook page after page, and he just starts drawing manacles and restraints on all the creatures that he created. And soon enough, the battle's over because all the creatures are bound up in these metal shackles and restraints and stuff. So the men that were fighting them say, look up to Kirby on top of this giant machine and say, thank you, mighty sorcerer. You are welcome in our land and homes anytime. And so, they, in the aftermath, Donatello and Kirby are walking back towards the portal, arms over each other's shoulders, and talking about getting something to eat. And but then they notice that the portal's actually starting to shrink fast. Kirby insists that Donatello go first, and he starts to argue, but he says, no, go, go. And so Donatello says, okay, I'll get through, but I'll pull you out. And Donatello gets like stuck halfway as the portal's closing around him. His feet are sticking out still in the old world, and Kirby's like, I'll give you a push. So he pushes Donatello out of the portal, but then it closes behind him. Donatello screams Kirby, and just before it poofs out of existence, a little paper airplane comes flying through, and we just see Donatello sit down on the ground and open up the paper airplane. We don't see what it says at this point, but we just see him stuff it kind of like into his waistband and then go back up stairs. And when he gets back up there, Raphael's still standing there in his towel and says, you've been gone for ages. What do we have hot water or what? And Donatello just, there's just a panel where Donatello gives him a look, just a frown, and doesn't say anything. He goes into another room, like I don't know if it's his bedroom or whatever. And it's the last page is a close up of what was inside the paper airplane. It just you see Donatello's hand holding it, and it's the drawing that Kirby did of Donatello with that fist weapon. And he wrote on it, Don, life at best is bittersweet. Take care of yourself, Kirby. And that's the end. So,
That sounds like a great issue.
yeah, it was fantastic. Like, I mean, I thought it was like a really, there's a lot of, there's a lot of tributes and stuff out there to Kirby. And I just thought it was one of the better ones I've seen, just really cool concept. And there's, a lot of these, a lot of the, excuse me. After a lot of the issues, they'll Eastman and Laird both have a comment, and then Eastman usually will go not necessarily panel by panel, but he'll comment on a lot of panels specifically. But this time they said it kind of they feel like the issue kind of speaks for itself, but they each have like a long a long comment, longer than usual. Eastman talks about how the genesis of this was when Kirby was fighting to get his original art back, and the legal battle was, he was actually having to take legal matters to do that, and they were concerned about how much money that was costing him. So they wanted to do, they came up with this issue, and were wanted they wanted to donate some of the money from it. And they had met him, so Laird asked the Kirby family about it, and they didn't want to take the money, but they were fine with them using Kirby in the story and building a story around it. Mm-hmm. But yeah, Eastman Sears, even though they always kind of like McCartney and Lennon, you know, everything was always credited to the two of them at this time, that this was pretty much Laird's concept and layouts. And Eastman was just super happy to have been a part of it in some way. Let's see if, what the hell? Tablet's doing something weird. Yeah, Laird also has a bunch to say, but that there's one particular, he mentions there's one particular page where the page where Kirby is explaining the crystal and lets Donatello try it out. He says he's pretty sure that Eastman laid that page out, and came up with the idea of including that to help readers understand what was going on with the crystal, let them actually see the process. And he says that was a really good addition to it. Mm-hmm. yeah, it's really neat. I mean,
just you describing it, you can feel like how much they wanted to honor Jack Kirby. You know what
yeah.
I mean?
Yeah.
Really, really impressive. I'd like to read this myself someday.
Yeah, and they definitely do a good job with, you know, like with the Kirby style stuff, and just, it's just a cool adventure that you almost, you know, you kind of wish Kirby had that experience kind of thing.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah. And it's interesting. One thing Laird talks about, which I thought was pretty interesting, that is would have been cool to see, is he had an idea of having the Mirage black and white turtles meet the Archie color turtles.
Oh, uh-huh.
And he was going to use the concept of Kirby and his warp crystal, and that Kirby would use the warp crystal to build the bridge, a gap between the two universes, the black and white and color turtles, and that they would interact with each other. Like they would, he would have had the art and color when it was the Archie universe, and it would be in black and white with when it was the Mirage turtles, sometimes on, you know, both on the same page, and have you know, the penciler who was doing a lot of the Archie color turtles do his work and stuff. Didn't happen apparently for a number of reasons, but it's not, that's, that would have been cool.
Yeah, for sure. That's awesome.
Yeah. Yeah, I didn't know about the issue ahead of time, so it was a nice surprise just picking it up and reading it and not knowing what it was gonna be.
Sure. Very nice. So I guess I'll do my comic. This little review is going to be dedicated to a Mr. Kirk Spencer. I don't know if he listens to this or not, but today I'll be covering Weird Western Tales number 59.
Was it Scalp Hunter?
Perhaps. Created and scripted by Michael Fleischer, and art by Dick Ayers and Romeo Tangal. Out of the blood-soaked Missouri hills he rode, a man who lived in two worlds but was at home at neither. Among the Kiowas who raised him was Kiwonote. He who is less than human, white men called him Scalp Hunter. So I know that if you've been you listen to the DC Everything Else, he's Kirk's always trying to get Joe to cover a scalp hunter buck. So I just
Yeah,
had
it
it
sounds like he's just trying to get Joe to just embrace his true love.
Yes, that's exactly it. So I figured I would cover one, and we open up this one with scalp hunter on a horse riding away from three guys that are shooting at him, and apparently scalp hunter killed one of their brothers. And it's funny, it's as they're riding, the exposition that these outlaws give, as they're chasing down scalp hunter. For instance, even if Billy did get drunk and tried to kill the Injun for no good reason, that still didn't give that savage no excuse to kill Billy and then scalp him. So I think, I don't know if this is comics code or what, but they wanted to make it crystal clear that scalp hunter is no like murderer that goes around killing people for no reason. So that's on the second page, the first panel.
Sometimes
So
I think it might be the other thing that I'm going to talk about today. If not, it was something else I read really recently. It's just like sometimes the exposition can just be so on the nose sometimes in older comics. It's pretty funny.
it is. So scalp hunter gets to a cliff, and there's really no way to jump across to the other side. Rather, he jumps, he takes the horse, and they jump straight down into the water below. And then he walks. Apparently the horse is okay after this quite a long fall, to be honest with you. And I thought, well, maybe the water's deep. But the water's not deep. He's walking the horse to the to dry land. How this horse was able to land in waist high water of a man on his front legs and still be okay, I don't know. But regardless, he did. So he's like, okay, that's gonna buy us some time, because they're gonna have to take, find a path. They'll certainly do so, but at least it gives me a few minutes to rest. And he finds this cave, so he sends the war pony off to kind of go in another direction, and he goes into the cave to hopefully get some rest, because as he was doing this jump down the ravine, he was shot a couple times, like in the shoulder. So he goes and hides in the cave, and he falls asleep without ever seeing that there's this old man, old white man, hiding in the cave behind him. Scalp hunter falls asleep. When he wakes up, he's been bandaged, and a fire has been started in the cave. And this guy says that, he's like, he had some wounds, but we bandaged you up. And you're just lucky. I was just waiting in this cave for waiting for Lucky to return. And it's like, here's some stew that I made. This will give you some more strength. And he's like, it's like, I was hoping you'd be the type of person that, I basically scratch your back, you'd scratch mine. I could certainly use some help in looking for Lucky. I've been waiting for him to return, thinking the best thing to do is just stay in one spot. He hasn't come back, and wandered off to find game and never came back. So he said, I think we've been waiting long enough. I gotta go and find him. And Scalp Hunter said, yeah, you saved my life. I'll certainly help you find your buddy. So they find Scalp Hunter's horse, and they start riding off in the direction that Lucky had last headed. Unfortunately, they're going right into Apache's sacred ground, where they bury their dead. And this old timer doesn't really care about that. He said, well, he's like, that's not going to stop me from getting to my buddy. It's like, we got to keep going. And Scalp Hunter does not like this at all, but he's like, I give him my word. So they start walking, and you see on a ridge above, there's three Apaches kind of watching them. And the old timer's not all that bright. He starts shouting as loud as he can. Lucky, Lucky, where are you, old buddy? And Scalp Hunter says, are you crazy? Be quiet. And suddenly an arrow pierces the old man's back shoulder. And he wants Scalp Hunter to grab his rifle. And it's like, it's bad enough we've got the attention of three Apache. I start shooting a rifle and hundreds are going to come. So he starts speaking to them, I'm assuming in Apache. And there's a couple panels of him just speaking, shouting out in Apache to the warriors up on the ridge. And the old timer says, well, what were you saying? The Scalp Hunter says, I told them that an Apache warrior is like a withered old woman, unfit to even wash the feet of a Kiowa. I told them that to use a rifle to kill an Apache is like using a machete to butcher a snail. And the old timer was like, you told them that? He's like, yep. And they come riding down with axes and spears. And honestly, Scalp Hunter makes pretty quick work of all three of them. And manages to then pull the arrow out of the old timer, and he's okay to continue. He's like, this is not good. He's like, I hope that Lucky didn't encounter these guys. And so Scalp Hunter says, well, how many days has your friend been gone? And the old timer says, Lucky, oh, 15 years, maybe 20. So I got the impression that this guy's not all with it much sooner than Scalp Hunter did. But just at that moment, those outlaws that had been shooting at Scalp Hunter at the beginning go ahead and they see him. And one of them's about to take aim where the second one says, wait a minute, let's hold off. Look at all that prospecting gear they have with them. They must be looking for gold. Like if they actually lead us to some gold, we'll get rid of them there. And so it cuts back to Scalp Hunter and the old timer, and he's stunned. He's like, he's been gone for 20 years. It's like, yeah, right about there. He's like, don't worry, we'll find him. He's wandered off before. And there's an old broken down well that like one of the walls of it is like kind of crumbled inward. And the old timer looks down there. He's like, oh no. He's like, I found Lucky. So he climbs down the well. The outlaws are watching in the distance. He's like, oh, they're looking for something. And the old timer is like, it's Lucky. All right. He's like, okay, I got him. Pull me up. So pulls him up. And right at that moment, the outlaws come and it's like, we're going to be taking, whatever you found down there. And it's like, we want your treasure. And the old timer's like, treasure? I don't have any treasure. This is just the remains of my poor old dog, Lucky. You wandered off 15 years ago. And, so the outlaws are pretty pissed. And, as they're distracted, Scalp Hunter grabs a knife from the back of his belt and throws it right into the chest of the one outlaw. And that kind of gets the other two surprised, and he runs, he charges the second one that's holding the rifle, kind of grabs the rifle and butts gets the butt right in the head of the second guy, knocks him right out. And the third guy at this point he's got to, he knows he's got to get out of there. So he drops his rifle, jumps on his horse and starts riding away. But Scalp Hunter grabs his bow and arrow from his own war horse and shoots the guy right in the back. So that's over with, and the old man's on his knees just crying about his dead dog and that he fell down in the well. And all of a sudden his eyes kind of like look off to the side and he's like, wait a minute, you see, you're not dead? Is that you? That's not you? He's like, "You're out there waiting for me? I hear you. I hear you coming." And a sandstorm kicks up, and he starts walking, and Scuffinder's trying to get the guy to stop to come back. He's got to find shelter. He's like, "No, I hear you, boy. I keep barking. I'm coming. I'm coming." And so, sure enough, Scuffhunter has to take shelter, and the next morning he finally breaks, and he finds the man just pretty much almost buried in sand, dead, of course. And he ends up, Scuffhunter ends up digging a shared grave for the old timer and for Lucky, so they can journey together to the Great Sky Valley. And that's the end of that particular issue. So it was certainly a telegraphed one. Kind of knew where that was coming from, but it was still, you know, very enjoyable to read. And that one's for Kirk.
Man, that I can't remember. I'm trying to remember. I think it was Enemy Ace, wasn't it? The story that you read where there was a
poor Shotzi.
Yeah. Mike wasn't too happy with you for picking that one.
No, he was not. Yeah, Shotzi fell right out of the airplane.
Yeah, I was cutting the grass while I was listening to that. I was like,
that was a downer for sure.
Yeah,
it was brokenhearted. But this one was, you know, poor Lucky. He did, you know, that was this guy definitely was dedicated to his pet. That's for sure.
Yeah, that would have been a tough decision. I might have ended up buried in sand myself in that scenario.
Yeah.
So I'm assuming that's one from your collection then.
Yeah. Oh yeah, that one's from my collection.
It's kind of the only way to read those.
I got when we first started that podcast, I kind of looked around specifically for a lot of Western war horror, and even I searched out a couple because I have like almost zero romance comics.
Mm-hmm.
But so I searched out a few of those as well, and I kind of got a stack of them. So I figure I can definitely. I missed the episode they did last week. I wasn't able to join them.
Is there a new one coming?
Yeah, we did a Western because July is a Western Comics Month.
Oh yeah, Joe was posting about that a lot.
Yeah, so he's like, let's try to get one in before the end of the month. So they ended up going, getting together. We were going to do Thursday, and then that wasn't going to work for everyone, so we were going to do Saturday. I'm like, okay, that's great. But then by Friday night, we saw that they were doing one of those movies, outdoor movies at Art Park.
Mm-hmm.
And it was Karate Kid, so we wanted to take the kids. So we, I'm like, I'm going to have to bow out. Then we went up to Lewiston. And turned out they were canceling or postponing the movie because of weather. But we stayed up there and we had a late dinner and we kind of walked around and stuff. I got home around 9 o'clock. So they had already started recording an hour before. So I ended up missing out on it. So I figure I cover a Western book today instead, in honor of Kirk and of course Joe as well. Cause Joe is I think probably according to Kirk, the biggest Scalpunter fan there is.
Yeah, pretty much. Nice. Yeah, this can be your contribution to that.
Yep, that's exactly it.
Supplemental material.
That's right. So what else do you have today?
All right, well, I'll talk about one more too. I was kind of in a similar vein in regards to at least publisher and service. Used. I had initially looked it up from Mike, but I was intrigued by the fact that all the classic G.I. Joe was on Comixology Unlimited. And a couple times I've gone to start reading these older ones and it didn't end up really happening. But Mike kept reminding me of it because he's been on G.I. Joe kick and he's reading stuff much later on in the run. But as I compulsively do, I always have to start from the beginning of everything.
That's how I would be.
Yeah. I don't alphabet. I don't go in alphabetical order,
No.
but I have definitely have my own compulsions. Yes, I've been reading the one or two of these here and there. And I was going to talk about issue number 7.
Oh,
So,
okay.
this is called Walls of Death. Script by Larry Hama, of course. But this, but pencils by Herb Trimpe, and also plot. So he was Herb Trimpe was pretty involved early on with this, and did some plotting and writing it himself.
I like their cover.
Yeah, it's a moment ago they were enemies. Now they fight together against the greatest evil in the world, and it's Stalker and one of the Russian October Guard. I'll remember his name. We're going through this, but he's I think
Yeah, I don't remember his
the
name.
leader. Standing back to back, firing their rifles, with a whole bunch of Cobra soldiers in the background. There's like
Yeah.
shells littering the ground around them. Chickstone inks over Herb Trimpe. So this is actually a continuation of the prior issue. And the scenario is they're in Afghanistan, the last issue kind of concerned more the Russian October Guard and the Joe team going after a Soviet. They were both trying to get to a Soviet aircraft that had crashed, and Cobra. It starts off with. In the foreground is Cobra Commander standing there with his back to you, and in the background facing us is a bunch of Joes and October Guard, and Cobra Commander is speaking to them and telling them, and how he basically his plan had been to set them against each other, so he could. Get this secret Soviet aircraft for himself and take them both down at the same time as pushing Cobra up. We get like a little panel where he makes a point of saying everybody's names, but it's integrated pretty well. He's like, "You see, I've studied your dossiers quite thoroughly. The infamous October Guard," and he goes through them. "The insufferable G.I. Joe team," he goes through them. So it's kind of like a part, it's like the style of his for effect in his speech. And Breaker says, "We love you too, Cobra Commander." Cobra's gonna take the aircraft to their stronghold, and he leaves two Cobra specialists, to basically like torture them as much as they want, and then take them out, and then follow when they're finished. Rattler and Copperhead are the two specialists. So it's not looking good. But then Clutch and Breaker are talking, and Breaker's got a smile on his face, and he doesn't seem too concerned about their situation. He says, "The hand is quicker than the eye," and Breaker says, "I see it, but I don't believe it." And coming up behind the Cobra specialists is a tank, and that fires on kills both the Cobra and get dudes, and basically he had like the gun mount remote control unit hidden, and he was standing there with his arms closed or his arms folded, but his one hand was working at the remote control. And he's like, "Didn't you guys ever wonder how I flared those things without ever touching them?" So now that the two Cobra dudes are dead, the October Guard and the Joe team decide, why don't we should team up basically for the time being. But Scarlet has a little bit to say to Stalker, that because apparently their orders are if they lose the cargo, they're supposed to break radio silence, contact Hawk, and get out of there. But Stalker says it's not an act of democracy, and he's in charge, and he's making a field command decision. And if they do leave, the October Guard may get their hands on the ship. And what is he going to say to Hawk if they do go back? Scarlet definitely seems like the most like opposed and angry at the Soviets and the idea of cooperating with them. But Stalker and the commander of the guard shake hands, and they roll out. Eventually, basically, they get to the Cobra stronghold, they use some like equipment to magnify and look in, and it's kind of strange compound where it just looks like it's solid walls on all sides. So Clutch puts on his like rocket launcher backpack type thingy to get a look from the sky. Meanwhile, they're having sort of like a celebration inside the Cobra stronghold on their victory, and but a lackey comes in and alerts the commander that there's some kind of like intruder in the airspace. They're detecting Stalker. So they get a monitor up, and Cobra Commander basically starts, "Dolts, idiots, morons!" The specialist that let them all escape is like, "Well, no matter, they're in a hostile country with no support, and we're gonna crush them." So he sends everyone to their battle stations. Back outside, the Stalker wasn't able to really get anything more so than they saw from a distance, that it's just on top that there's this like concentric pattern, kind of maze-like on top, that and they think it might be some kind of a alarm system. So basically, they just come up with this plan. They're gonna like break up their two teams into different units. There's gonna be like one guard and two Joes go up top on the roof, and then two four-man teams to attack from the from opposite walls on the ground. Inside, they're able to sense all of this, that as the assault teams are coming from either side, and from here we basically get like this sequence of the October Guard and Joe team both working together to try to infiltrate this strange compound. Well, the roof does turn out to be not only an alarm, but it's like They're three of them are up there, and they're thinking, there's something familiar about this pattern. And the guard says, "Da, it is resembling what you call it, hot dish, yet hot plate." And we see inside that they activate it. It's like an electrical field, zap, and the three folks up there are, like we find out later, knocked unconscious by this. So the whole roof of the place is a big trap. So from there, we basically follow the two four-man teams trying to get in. They do find an entrance. And in fact, there's a door that just kind of opens for them. And they're like, "Well, it's got to be a trap." And Stalker says, "Well, we were gonna just try to cut through with a laser, and they would have known we were here when you started doing that." So, what I kind of liked about this sequence is just them trying to infiltrate this base and deal with all these traps that they end up encountering. Like Stalker and Scarlet are on one team, and they think that they've come to a dead end. And Stalker says, "That's actually the good news. The bad news is under my foot." And there's like a trip release, and they have to jump out of the way because basically the whole wall comes down at them. And then like they hear the sound of rushing water, and it comes flushing through, and they have to climb up on this rubble to keep from getting washed through, but it's not enough, and they get carried away by this water, and it's carrying them towards this like pit. So it's kind of this neat sequence for Scarlet, where she always has like the throwing stars on her forearm. She grabs one of those and manages to wedge it into this little crack in the wall, like a mountain climber, and then she hooks her crossbow onto the throwing star to give everybody something to hang on to, and everyone's able to hold on to that while the water eventually recedes. And they find that they were just on the edge of like this long, this deep pit that they have to jump over. So the traps continue. They end up actually coming across like actual cobras, a big pit of those, and they even call out whether it was Trimpy or probably Brain Fart,
Larry Hama.
Larry Hama. Thank you. says this looks like a bit they copped from Steven Spielberg. I think one of the Indiana Jones movies would have been pretty current right at this time. And they're like, "Stay back. A king cobra can spit venom a good 10 feet," which I didn't know that was. I wasn't aware of that. So Flash, not Wally Westerbilly, Barry Allen, but Flash of the Joes. He's got like he can cover his whole face with his visor and has the protective. He's covered, but at that point he's pretty much covered his entire body, so he's able to go in and starts firing away at the cobras while they're just like splat 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 with venom, but none of it's getting on his skin. So yeah, they finally encounter some actual cobra soldiers that they and Stalker tosses like a grenade their way. And they get to like a dead end, and at this point they use some C4 to blow their way through, and when they finally get through, they come across Colonel Brekhov, that's his name, and a couple of the other October Guard. And Brekhov says, "I'm believing there's a saying in your country, better late than never. I'm afraid that does not apply in this case. Your weapons, please." And apparently they captured so their team, which we didn't see pretty much their progress. So, to set up the surprise, basically they captured a Cobra prisoner and persuaded, is in quotes, him to lead them past the traps. So basically that's how they got there much faster. And 'cause they knew what to expect. And he says it seems that Cobra Commander has fled rather than confront the freedom loving, and then he's cut off. Someone saying, "Not true, my dear Colonel Brekhov. Confrontation is my forte." And he said, I play the same trick I played last issue." He didn't say last issue, of course. He set them against each other, and so we see he's behind like this, or I don't know if he comes out. It's all off panel, so I'm not sure if he comes out from behind something or with a bunch of other Cobra soldiers that have their weapons out. So it looks once again like at the beginning of the show, it's looking bad. Cobra Commander says, "I shall oversee your execution personally this time." He's learned from his mistake at the beginning of the issue, and then, but we see the Cobra soldier behind him is reaching for something, and then, fuck, as Clutch pulls his helmet off, he pistol whips Cobra Commander over the back of the head. And then jumps on top of him, grabs him by the throat, and puts his pistol to, Cobra Commander's silver battle helmet. So, earning his namesake there, Clutch, with a clutch save. Apparently, when we find out later, that when earlier he saw Cobra Commander coming up behind him, and so he knocked him out with and put on the Cobra costume and their uniform and just walked right in. So and yeah, he did kind of just disappear earlier. So basically, he saves the day. He's got Cobra Commander under gunpoint. So he's able to, stop. But a little wrinkles is thrown into it when Brekhov says, "I can't allow this. With Cobra Commander's hostage, you're gonna succeed, and that's unacceptable." And Clutch says, "Well, that's tough. What are you gonna do about it?" Brekhov says, "Eliminate the hostage," and he shoots Cobra Commander in the chest. Clutch pulls back the front of Cobra Commander's uniform, and it's just a double wearing a loudspeaker, and Cobra Commander's face comes up on the back on the big like screen that all these bases seem to have, saying, "You didn't think I would expose myself to your dangerous presence again, did you?" And he's like, he goes on and on, and he's like, "We don't want to hear it, buddy. Let's get the show on the road." And so the Joes are getting into a vehicle, and one of the October Guard, the only female member, is she's like, "Wait, take us with you." And Stalker just straight arms her to the face, and says, "Shove off, sister. This bus is full." Clutch says, "You certainly have a way with the ladies, Stalker." So, and then the epilogue in the port of Karachi in Pakistan. They're meeting back up with Hawk, and Hawk says, "Terrific job, Stalker. I guess I can tell you the truth now. We airlifted the real plane out of Afghanistan yesterday. That box you've been hauling is just full of scrap metal and no deposit bottles. You were the red herring, the decoy. Excellent work, team. Excellent. Like, that final panel is just like half profile of Hawk as he's walking away, and you see Stalker in the background. His expression doesn't look too happy.
I'm sure.
But yeah, I don't know. I thought that issue was just a fun one with a lot of you know, just kind of plot twists, and it was just entertaining, sort of having the like base infiltrate. It's always kind of fun with when you have a little a small squad that's trying to get in and break through a bunch of traps and stuff, and just a lot of switcheroos. Not necessarily surprising, but satisfying and fun.
Mm-hmm. I've been wanting to go back and do a reread from the beginning for quite a while now, but just have so much backlog that I just haven't gotten to it. I'd like to do that at some point.
Yeah, the thing that, I mean, I don't know how far I'll get with it, but the thing that attracts me to doing that is the fact that Larry Hama is, like, to this day still involved.
You know? Yeah.
It's just, like, yes. Fascinating. Like, you don't have that kind of longevity on the title, and a lot of his storytelling style with this larger cast, it's like Claremont X-Men with, you know, just this large cast of characters being mm-hmm. jungled in and out, and people coming and going, and multiple, like that old school serial storytelling where you have multiple plots and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So that's kind of what makes me want to read it.
I totally agree. It's just it's incredible to. I think it's just really cool that, you know, after it was canceled, you know, whatever it was, 12 years, 14 years later, IDW's, you know, obviously must have approached him, said, "Do you want to start this back up or continue where you left off?" And I mean, that just the fact that he's pretty much the only writer of this title, except for a fill in here or there, is just, I mean, it's incredible.
Yeah, yeah, that too. That the rarity of a different publisher picking up a long running series and having it continue for as long as it does. I mean, I can think, speaking of Claremont, I know that they like did that series where it was kind of like, what if he hadn't left?
Yeah.
And stuff like that, but that doesn't seem to have been as successful.
No. Oh. But yeah, I mean, this is, it's, yeah, so, okay, so last issue had come out in 1994. And then in 2010, they started it back up with the next number.
Yeah.
So that's cool. 16 years later. And yeah, he's into it, you know. So it's awesome.
And I'm happy to. I'm also happy to, like, I'm definitely in favor of picking up and continuing the numbering.
Yeah.
Again, which is a rare thing. Where it hasn't been at some point started. I mean, obviously they did other Joe series.
They've done a million that come and go, but this
come
one
and
just
go.
keeps continuing. So.
Yeah. Yeah, but they haven't like they didn't like go. Okay, this is, you know, G.I. Joe number like 400 because we're gonna count all the other series we did. You know,
exactly.
We're gonna, you know, we're gonna try to have our cake and eat it too by celebrating the 1,000th issue, even though, you know, we blah blah blah. But
yeah, exactly.
So it's a rarity in a lot of ways these days.
Very much so. So I'm looking. It looks like IDW has had 6 volumes of plain old G.I. Joe.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas, you know, that started in 2008, so a couple of years before they decided to relaunch the one with Larry Hama. But than, all these other series that have kind of come and went to various, degrees of success, whereas Real American Hero just keeps chugging along.
Yeah, I read some of that. I read actually a bunch of that, first new one that they did in 2008 or whatever, when they had the like had the Cobra series.
The one they just finished that only went 10 issues maybe. I mean, literally finished last year. It was like a scenario Cobra had won type of thing. Cobra had well, Cobra had taken over all of the United States, and now it's a new, basically a new country. There were some Joes that were part of this G.I. Joe organization leading up to this, but you don't. I mean, you see it as of they've already taken control of the country, and then some, and then it's kind of picking up where okay, we're gonna grab some new people to kind of help out. Like Roadblock is a brand he's a brand new Joe in this scenario. Like they but he's interested in the resistance, and it's basically what they are. Whereas like Scarlet and Duke were part of a an actual elite team that ended up being part of the surrender when Cobra took over, but they wanted to stay and fight back. So it was interesting. It was really a different type of take, and I thought really well done. But again, it only lasted 10 issues and then an end of the series special.
Yeah, it seems like they haven't been able to have something like stick permanently. Whereas I'm looking right now at their October solicitations, G.I. Joe, Real American Hero number 287, is solicited.
Yeah, we're almost to 300.
Yeah, but it doesn't like it looks like they're kind of they don't really have their own GI other GI Joe stuff going on besides that.
No, yeah, that's it right now.
But speaking of Ninja Turtles, though, that's seems to have, must be doing well enough for them because they're that's been going for a long time now. They're new.
Yeah, good
That's
10 plus years now.
issue 122.
Yep.
I just
Yeah.
like to see that, like
I
that,
me
like
too.
Savage Dragon, Spawn, like just anything that's just like started with number one, like, and is just continuing and just sticking with the original numbering. And, I mean, I get it. Like, I know why they don't, when they don't do it, they don't do it, but I just like to see it.
Yeah. I mean, we came so close with Action Comics and Detective Comics. You
Those
know,
two are the worst, yeah, I think, just.
it was right there, and to read in retrospect, there was discussion at DC, okay, we're going to reboot things at number one, but we'll leave these two as ongoing with their old numbering, and then finally it's like, no, this is going to be a complete relaunch. We have to renumber, we decided we're doing everything with a new number one. And, to know that it only lasts 4 or 5 years and revert, it's like it was so close. It could have been one through 1,000 with no break. So close. And you had to mess it up just basically 4 years or 5 years before it would have hit 1,000.
So close.
Yep.
Yeah, exactly. And it really would not have, it wouldn't have confused, I don't think it would have confused anybody really
Not
that
no,
much.
not at all. I mean, I understand what they were trying to accomplish, but I really wish they would have said, okay, these two titles we're going to set aside. They're part of the reboot, but for historical purposes, they're continuing their numbering.
Yeah.
No one would have been confused. You're absolutely right.
In hindsight, yeah, the hindsight definitely makes it even worse. And I'm surprised they thought. I mean, I know their hopes were really high for the new 52, and it was briefly successful. That's been actually one of the interesting things about another interesting thing about cartoons kayfabe and looking back at through Wizard Magazine, looking back at that era of comics. So fascinating. I know Mike's talked a lot about it recently. Such a fascinating time. Like, even if you don't like 90s comics, it's still a very fascinating time for the industry, even if some of that fascination is negative, like negative things for the industry. But such a interesting transitionary period, and it was really like when I was collecting comics as a kid that was it was really my era. So I as a kid I was not an iconoclast with my or a rebel with my comics taste, because I was all in with the Super Spider-Man and the X-Men, and that's what everybody else loved. And it was all about the artists, and when the artists jumped to Image, I just followed them because
Oh, there
that's
was a
what
lot
I
of excitement in the
cared
air for
about.
all of
And
that. Yeah.
I didn't stick around too much longer after that in comics in general. But it's really fascinating just going and go. They make a point of just like, I didn't much care about DC at all then. As like an 8-year-old or 9-year-old, 10-year-old, whatever. I had a friend who would talk about DC sometime. It's like, oh, they're gonna break back Batman's back, and I was like, yeah, whatever. I mean, Batman was the only one I sort of cared about with, is because of the movie, and a little bit the Flash, because I did watch the TV show, because it was superheroes and it was a TV show. It was a rarity at that
Very
time,
rare, yeah.
so I did watch the Flash. But just month after month, it's just like, where's DC in the top 10? Nowhere to be found. It's just
Yeah.
no. DC was just not. I mean, they were really struggling, and they have a brief blip where like there was some hype around Robin 3, the Robin 3 series and Tim
Yeah.
Drake and stuff, but then just out again. And it was like, and they made a point on the show a couple times. They've said, who killed Superman? Image killed Superman.
Yeah.
It is just the sequence of events is just so clear. Like looking through Wizard Magazine month by month, it's just like, I mean, DC is just nowhere to be found. And then Image and Valiant show up, and it's just, DC just had nothing going. Like there was just no hype and no interest in DC Comics at that time. And
That's true.
they kill Superman, for 1 month. They have a comic at number one. And then it just drops off again.
Yeah. Yep.
But yeah, it was just, it's pretty clear. It's just like, yeah, it's true. Like Image, it wasn't really Doomsday. It was Image that killed Superman. 'Cause they're just like, what are we gonna do? We gotta do something. It's just like, let's kill Superman. It was like desperation. It's just like so many times in history, like that seems to be DC's position. It's just like, what weird thing or concept can we do to try to like gain some ground again?
Yeah.
But
Very reactive.
yeah, that's the perfect word, very reactive.
Yeah, too bad.
But
Oh, and we're just about wrapping up, but I just wanted to mention, 'cause you reminded me when you were talking about your G.I. Joe book. We watched the Raiders of the Lost Ark with the kids for the first time last weekend.
oh, cool.
Yeah, it went over great with Zach. Allie, she thought it was okay. She thought parts were a little bit scary for her.
Yeah, they definitely have their moments. I always get my Indiana Jones movies mixed up. Well, I get two of the first two mixed up in my head, like what happens in which. Last Crusade is like, it's real distinct for me.
Yeah.
And I've never seen Crystal Skull.
Oh, you're not missing much.
Yeah, that's what I hear.
Yeah,
Yeah, Raiders of the Lost Ark and Temple of Doom, I get a little mixed up in my head.
I see. For me, it's night and day from. I mean, I like Temple of Doom. Don't get me wrong, but
Yeah.
Raiders is Raiders. It was one of my one of my growing up movies that it was like, oh my God, this is incredible. But Jack thought it was just, he loved it.
It's definitely a, just like, it's a great young boy movie.
Yeah.
Yeah. When I stop and like, it's like, I get a mix up in my head and where I have to like stop and think about, it's like, okay, this is the first one and this is that one. And then Temple of Doom, that's the one with the Nazis. And I do remember going to a birthday party when I was in elementary school and Temple of the Doom was on TV.
Uh-huh.
That's just a random memory, but they both have their like pulpy violence moments.
I think the point of them actually.
Oh yeah, they're just, yeah. Like a definite like. I mean, for that, for Spielberg and Star Wars, for, you know, it's like they're both, for Lucas, they're both like, they both draw heavily upon the stuff that they grew up with.
Yep.
You know, and loved the pulp science fiction, the pulp adventure.
But it was fun to, I mean, because we've been kind of, you know, as they get older, we've been trying to share some stuff with, you know, that we kind of grew up with, and mm-hmm. Like, my God, I didn't even think about Raiders of the Lost Ark for some reason. It popped in my head. I'm like, oh, we got to show them that one.
Yeah.
It was fun. It was nice.
That's cool.
Yeah. But that's all that I have today. That's all I brought with me.
Yeah, me too. 12:40. We did pretty good.
Yeah, very good.
For two of us.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right, well, I am at MythMaking ETC on Twitter. Rob is Rob Krieger.
Yeah.
And Mike is Mike Myers Brunch. And that's how you can reach us. We're always open to questions if you ever want to throw them out to focus our chitter chatter.
Yeah, definitely. If, you know, I mean, any time for a question, we'll set it aside and cover it in the next episode.
Yep. And besides that, I hope you, sun came out here.
Yeah, a little bit here.
I don't know
how
long it's going to last. I think it's not going to last all day, but it's good to see it.
Yes, exactly.
So enjoy the rest of your Sunday. Next weekend looks a little warmer, a little nicer.
That'll be nice.
So
do something outside, maybe.
Yeah, we got to get our summer in.
Yeah, I mean, it's starting to draw to a close, but at the same time, Septembers have been very beautiful the last few years, so hopefully we'll have a nice September.
Yeah, we were still able to do some stuff outside last September, I think.
Yeah, yeah. So it really lasts pretty much almost the whole month of September now, so you can't complain.
No.
Well, have a great rest of your weekend, and enjoy your day and your evening.
All right, you do the same, sir.
Thanks, Chris.
Talking to you.
Yeah, right. Always fun.
Yep. All right. Take care.
Bye.
Bye.